Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan here with my pal Kieran Deal.
Hi.
Hey. And Grace Parra.
Hi.
This week, my pals join me to talk about the family separation policy's ongoing impact on people's lives and whether or not we feel bad about Trump supporters who can't find dates. Spoiler alert, we do not. Plus, Grace and I teach Kieran about juggalos, This Week in Sorry, and then we head to New York for I'll Have What She's Having. But first, the good news. Ladies, I wanted to, before we get into it today, RIP to Donald Trump's Hollywood Walk of Fame star.
It's so hard.
It's real harsh.
So this morning, a man carrying a guitar case walked up to the Hollywood Walk of Fame star of our president, Donald Trump, opened the guitar case, removed a pickaxe. Mm. This is where it gets slapstick. removed a pickaxe, smashed that fucker to smithereens, the star.
The star.
Then called the police on himself and left the scene.
I that's my favorite part of this, calling the police on yourself. It's like you're your own, your own prisoner.
Yeah, that's the mic drop of crime.
Yeah, it really is.
I like the idea that like he took the pickaxe and he broke it. I was like, oh, now that's a gif I'd like to see.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been a great, you know, like everyone's always making their gifs. And I was like, oh, him like destroying the star if he's going to get arrested for it anyway.
Right.
You know,
just is he like, going to? Or can it be seen as art?
Well, he turned himself in. Mm. So it's like probably, well, you wanted to date him, right?
I just want to know if he's single. Because you know, he kind of really takes you on a journey. Because on one hand, guitar case, ooh.
Right.
Guitar case.
Oh, wait, you're not into, guitars? The acoustic guitarists, the six stringers?
You're kind of a sucker for that, aren't you? A little bit of a sucker.
Well, I also play guitar myself.
That's
so,
why.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So basically, if you want to date me, Erin,
this whole thing.
Huh. Well, I just think that it's so Los Angeles. I just got here on Saturday for this like long job, so I'm going to be out here for a while, and it's so Los Angeles that somebody was like, you know what? I'm going to smash his Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Also, the timing of it is fascinating. It's like not when he got elected or not after, you know, any particularly inflammatory. It's just a random Tuesday.
It's also the second time it's happened.
Yeah.
Because it happened in 2016.
Oh, is that true?
Like, yes.
Oh.
But this guy was like, no, I'm gonna go back in for the kill. And mm-hmm. he really like went for it harder.
Different guy though, right?
Different guy.
It'd
be great if it was the same guy.
Yeah.
He's like, this is my bit. This is my life's purpose.
And he says that to any celebrity that he's unhappy with. Sorry, Allman Brothers.
Yeah, I hope that the star is pretty fairly pulverized. Like,
oh,
if you take
yeah.
it, it is an X star. It is no longer a star.
I don't know if you watched the video of when the police officer came in, but he was definitely sauntering. Like, it was a heavy saunter. It was like, I'm okay with this.
There's no urgency
that. He was just like, he was really taking his time.
You know,
to get there.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned it's just a random day, but end of July has weirdly held a lot of significant dates in the scandal life of Donald Trump. Mm. The Paul Manafort raid happened on July 26th.
Right.
And I remember that because July 26th is my birthday.
And happy upcoming birthday,
Thank you. I'm still alive. I made it. But it's like there was this. There was the both of the conventions happened at the end of July 2016.
That's right.
This is kind of, you know, astrologically speaking, I don't believe in astrology, but mm-hmm. astrologically speaking, this is an important time for the Trump campaign to have bad things happen to
it. Is this what Leo season, right?
Yeah. let's go to the good news. There has actually been
yes.
some good news stories in the week this week.
Yes.
Grace, do you want to start?
I would love to start. All you Nevada heads out there, I know there's a lot of you. What do you call a person from Nevada?
Nevadian? I don't know, but we're going to get emails about it now.
We sure are. Please email us about this. So Nevada is about to make history by potentially electing the country's first female majority state legislator. Very Ooh. Exciting. That's right. Nevada inches away from looking like an episode of Godless. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but pretty awesome. Except for that Truckee character who I could not stand. Have you seen the show?
I
don't know if is that too niche a reference. You Snapchat me if it's too niche a reference. I'm not on Snapchat. If you're over 30 and on Snapchat, by the way, just walk into the sea. Anyway, so women in Nevada won a record number of primaries in June. Very exciting. Nevada saw more than double the number of recruits this year than any that they've seen in the past 12 years. And so based on party registration and the partisan makeup of their districts, women are favored to control 27 out of 42 seats heading into the 27 Nevada legislature. So that's 19 in the Assembly, 8 in the Senate. So women have to add at least 5 seats, including 4 in some highly competitive Assembly districts, to secure this 32-seat majority. But it's very possible. So to me, this begs 2 questions. First of all, if women are leading the state, who is going to do the laundry? I don't know how that's going to get done.
I mean, have you seen a detergent ad? The dad's always like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
What's always.
Everybody's just going to be pouring things on the ground.
Yeah. Except for when Meghan Markle wrote that ad when she was 12, and she wrote and she was like, people need to do their dirty dishes. Do you remember this?
Did she do that?
Yeah, she did.
This was her baby feminism act.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
She was interviewed by Linda Ellerbee.
That's a deep cut. Oh, I love that. Does our demo know and love Linda Ellerbee?
I'm sure.
Dear to my heart. Well, okay, so the second question to pose to you guys, in all seriousness, how do we make sure that we balance quality along with quantity when it comes to this kind of thing? Because we're very close to approaching this amazing milestone. I think we all agree that representation is huge and important and fantastic. And if we can get not just equal female representation, but a female majority representation, that would be, you know, theoretically amazing. But what happens if a lot of these candidates who are female are also shitty bitties? Like, how do you balance these two?
I think that's a great question. And I think that, you know, the Nevada thing isn't an entirely 100% positive news story just because it's women.
Yes.
But I think it is interesting that a state is capable of possibly electing women, even if not all of them are great, even if not all of them are people that I would vote for or that I even think anybody should support. I think the fact that gender hasn't been a barrier for them is a good sign.
I
think that's the takeaway from it. It's like gender. Okay, so gender isn't a barrier in this specific case, in these specific races. These women have been able to win despite their gender, or, you know, maybe because of it. But so I think that's a good takeaway, because we can't pretend that just being a woman is enough.
Agreed.
They're still politicians.
So, she's a woman and also a politician. So, Kieran, what do you have?
I have the story about there was the woman who inherited millions of dollars, and she's been giving it away in $25,000 chunks to female artists over 40. And she revealed who she was, and it was the artist Susan Unterberg. Did you guess Unterberg? Susan Unterberg. So I looked up a bunch of her work. She's a stunningly good photographer. And so she was anonymous since 1992, and she had access to these huge amounts of funds. She gives this kind of like mid-career grant when women really need kind of a push, because sometimes as an artist you can be doing well, but you're not necessarily getting financial benefits from it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. You're the hot new thing, or you're like an established legacy. And if you're somewhere in the middle, it's probably kind of rough.
Exactly. Yeah. And so she was an artist, like a mid-career artist over 40. And so she gave this grant anonymously, essentially because she felt that there was a very patriarchal and unfair system that exists in the art world, where it's, you know, kind of men in power. Like, the number of women who are in museums, the number of women's art which is represented in major museums, is incredibly small. The very opposite of the Nevada legislature.
Right.
You know, just there's just a tiny fraction of women who kind of represent the look of what art looks like. So she was very much about women helping women, and she thought that this was kind of the moment to come out and reveal herself. Mm-hmm. And I find that really, it's to me, the thing I think is really interesting about this story is A, it's a reminder that what we see in art and what we take to be excellence is very curated by what our society thinks is excellence.
Yeah.
So if that is majority male, we are all being influenced by, you know, like, that's the vision of what genius looks like. That's what art looks like. That's what creativity looks like. And I think that that has an effect on the way that we process the world.
Subconsciously.
Yeah. Like, you don't even realize that, you know, you're like, oh, that an artist is Leonardo da Vinci. Like, you got to be a turtle to be an artist. You know what I mean? So, then it was Amy Sherald painted Michelle Obama's portrait. And she said she got the grant at this moment in time when, like, she had $1,500 in her bank account, and she used it to get you know, like to be able to keep her studio,
yeah.
which is fucking crazy mm-hmm. and yeah. says something about like, do we value art in mm-hmm. our society? If like, like you're talking about a mid-career artist who's over 40, who gets commissioned to do the presidential portrait and like you're over 40 years old, you've been doing this mm-hmm. and like you don't, you almost lose your studio if you didn't get this grant, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, what, you know?
Yeah, I, you know what I love about this story, in addition to the actual 220 women that mm-hmm. she's helped, yeah. $25,000 at a time, 220 women since mm-hmm. 1992, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. One thing that I really like about this is like, if, okay, listeners who are very rich mm-hmm. out there, if, first of all, buy all the products that we advertise. Second of all, this is what you do with it. This is the responsible yeah, way yes. to be a citizen. She inherited money from her father mm-hmm. and she decided, I'm going to not be a shithead with it. I'm mm-hmm. going to give back and re-inject it into the community. And I think that she's a really inspiring example of how a person who's been given everything can still have the awareness to give back.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And she's like a Medici. I mean, she's literally like the benefactor model.
Yeah.
But she's an artist herself. So uh-huh. it was like, oh, way to kind of like, you know,
yeah,
push forward.
She's super cool.
And she did it with her sister, apparently, too, right?
Yeah, her mm-hmm. sister was also.
I love that. Yeah. Sister.
I would watch a movie about that. Two sisters oh, yeah. that like secretly give away $25,000 at a time.
I love that.
To women, yeah.
That'd be super cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of a woman who's been wealthy and, well, I guess women who are wealthy, here's an example of a woman who's been wealthy and not done great stuff with it. Shoe saleswoman Ivanka Trump has discontinued her fashion business, unfortunately. Have you guys seen Ivanka Trump's fashion line, by the way?
Yeah, I stumbled across a pair of Ivanka shoes at Macy's one day over Christmas when I was shopping with my mom. It was pretty grim.
And you were like, I have to buy these.
I need these in size 6.
You know what they kind of reminded me of? If Anne Taylor got straight C's.
That's perfect. Yes.
It's
yes.
just sort of, yes. I don't know, it's sort of like down market basic wear and yeah. nothing really special about it. But it was made in sweatshops or in foreign environments. And mm-hmm. she, I'm going to go ahead and say nobody's really going to miss the Ivanka Trump brand of clothing.
No.
This is the one thing that I thought was really funny about her statement earlier this week about discontinuing her fashion line. After 17 months in Washington, I do not know when or if I will ever return to the business, but I do know that my focus for the foreseeable future will be the work I am doing here. So making this decision now is the only fair outcome for my team and partners. I have a question. What fucking work?
Yes, what work?
I was just about to ask that same question. I was like, and is there any way we could convince you to stop doing that work now? You know,
yeah.
maybe you should just make the shoes, Ivanka. You know, like just
that's a better use yeah, of your time and our time too.
Yeah, just go back to the shoes. Do the pointy ones and yeah. the round, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, keep making shift dresses. That's yeah. fine.
Or like
that's fine.
Purses that look like Kate Spade just gave up. Yeah, like a Kate Spade brand mm-hmm. purse that's just given up. I don't know what, first of all, if her brand is I'm pro woman, I'm, you know, I'm an empowering person, and she's in the background of photos of an administration that separates children from their families and does all these horrible things. Like, she's just, her move to stay in Washington is career self-immolation.
Completely.
I don't think, I think the longer that she stays there, the longer the stink of her father is going to remain on her. Mm-hmm. And she's made a decision now to let that stink be her entire brand for the yeah. rest of her life.
Right.
So good riddance to that Bye. Clothing line. This is us finding good news in a story that starts out pretty bad.
You're in LA now. You're going to get some optimism.
Yeah.
Hashtag grateful.
Just kale and sunshine.
It's just really great.
I have been eating a lot of kale. Massachusetts has formally repealed an abortion ban. Massachusetts had on its books a 173-year-old law against the procurement of a miscarriage. And in light of Justice Kennedy's retirement announcement, the Commonwealth has passed a bill called the Nasty Women Act. And the NASTY stands for Negating Archaic Statutes Targeting Young Women Act. And they've been working on it for 6 years, but now they finally kind of pushed it through. They're not the only state that is trying to enshrine women's rights to access abortion. New Mexico and New York also doing the same thing, mm-hmm. trying to do the same thing. But Massachusetts is further along. So I guess good for Massachusetts.
I mean, I like the acronym there. Nasty Women Act. That's fun.
Nasty Women Act. I mean, but it's also sort of like, you know, sad aggressive.
It's
cool that they did this, but also sad that they had to.
Right?
No.
That's where we're at.
Like, oh, yeah. God. Okay. This is a segment we call News Dive. Because we're diving into the news. Also because this is a part of the show that always when I'm putting together outlines for the show every week, I start to feel really sad because the stories are very heavy. But there's stories that we need to keep talking about because if we don't pay attention to them and just kind of blissfully skip about our lives, there are people that want to do harm that are paying attention and never stop paying attention. So we're going to talk about some heavy stuff today. Grace, I wanted you to take the lead on this conversation because I know it's an issue that's very dear to you.
Yes. We are. Well, let me start here. It's so interesting to see the ebbs and flows of the stories of the day. Like you mentioned, things can get swept under the rug very quickly. And I think the separation of families at the border is one of those stories that really struck a chord with us nationally in a way that was heartwarming, you know, to see so many people jump to the aid of these families and to understand kind of universally how problematic this was. But inevitably, with the news cycle, it's kind of, you know, gone right now. Although we are approaching, if you're listening to this on Thursday, a very important deadline with regard to this story. So I'll start with kind of where we are right now, fill you in on a couple of updates, and then talk about a couple angles that I think have been slightly less than discussed in this area. So again, if you're listening to this on Thursday, a federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to reunite the migrant children separated from their families. But the administration and the ACLU have failed to agree on how much time parents should have to decide on whether to seek asylum after they've reunited with their children. And the Trump administration...
What are they asking for? The families wanted how many days?
I think the families want to get reunited with their kids as quickly as possible.
But then they wanted to have like a little bit of a grace period. They wanted a four-day grace period, I think, correct?
I think that's correct, yes.
Okay,
yes.
And then the Trump administration wants to give them one day.
One day, exactly, which is like, how do you compromise these things?
Yeah, you get reunited with your kid and then you have 24 hours to decide if you want to stay in the country or get deported.
Exactly.
That is... inhumane.
It is absolutely. Imagine having to make that decision. Not that you haven't been thinking about it this whole journey, for sure, but
it sounds like an episode of reality television.
Almost fancy.
Almost as if your president was formerly
it
in reality like, television.
Like an episode of reality television, but like in Black Mirror.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And by the way, that's one of the kind of more interesting topics in this area that's been discussed is like some of these parents are considering leaving their kids in the United States even without them, by the way. If the parents get deported, the kids are left in the United States and they're saying, look, I know that the life that I can provide for my child in Guatemala is not nearly as good as a chance they may have to have an amazing life in the United States, mm-hmm. which is really misguided, by the way. I don't think that's the right direction to go in. But when you're faced with a situation of having 24 hours to make a decision about how to handle this, you know, there's just so much mental anguish and cognitive anguish happening that it's no wonder there's a lot of bad decisions being made.
Well, it's hard for us to discuss this right now as people that don't have children that have been taken from us.
Yeah.
And discuss it and not find ourselves veering into kind of irrational and try to wrap our heads around. It's impossible for us. I can't imagine. If I were enmeshed in this or personally involved in this, how I would possibly make a decision or think straight or see straight.
And that's I think, one of the bigger issues, too, that we're going to see in the long-term effects of this whole family separation issue. How do you make sure to provide mental health help for the children who've been affected by this, but for the families that have been affected by this? Because this is not an acute situation. This is very much something that's going to have chronic repercussions.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're looking far enough into the future to determine how can we help these kids. Mm-hmm. We have a responsibility as a country to make sure that we protect the mental health of both the kids and the families. Mm-hmm. We're not even at the point right now. Of course, we're just trying to reunite families. But at the end of the day, that's not going to be enough. If we're not providing some sort of protection for these kids and for their parents, that's on us. I mean, we are defining a generation based on the kind of anguish that they're experiencing in these days. And that's a question maybe to pose. What do we do knowing that mm-hmm. morally? How do we as individuals approach this topic knowing that we have to try to preempt the kinds of repercussions that are inevitable?
Well, the thing that's really frustrating is that it shouldn't have happened in the first place.
Exactly.
We shouldn't have separated how many kids were separated? Over 2,500 kids were separated from their parents. Yesterday, the New York Times had a piece saying that more than 450 migrants were deported without their kids. There's no clear plan on how to reunite them. This is completely something that we made ourselves. Yep. Karen, what did...
I was just curious, with those 450, was that a decision that they made, or were they forced into leaving before they were able to make the decision? You know, you were just talking about that.
I'm not sure either.
I think that they were being deported without their children, but not necessarily fully understanding what was happening. Mm-hmm. What we're finding sometimes is that there's a language barrier, and it's not just English, Spanish. There's a lot of indigenous languages that even Spanish speakers don't necessarily know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that's getting lost in communication.
It's like India.
Exactly.
Just a ton of local languages in addition to like this like kind of national language, which might be Spanish.
Exactly.
So not necessarily going to have all the translators there.
Right. So they're not even, you know, they're not even being armed with the proper information to make a decision properly.
And so these children are ostensibly in some sort of system. Mm-hmm. We're not even capable of keeping track of what families have been separated or where people are being sent. But now
they're in homes or cages. Who knows?
Yeah. Now the kids are being sent into these places that are super far away. I remember a few weeks ago, did you guys read about this? How the U.S. government was charging families to get their kids back?
Oh, they still are. Actually, I read something yesterday that was, and did you hear also about the amount? They're charging up to $8 a minute to talk to your kid on the phone from ICE agencies.
Jesus Christ. $8.
They're commodifying this. At this point, it's ransom, basically. Yeah. You're having to pay ransom to get your kid back.
Yeah, I mean, they were charging people. I mean, what they were doing was they were also like flying them from the border to New York, for example. They flew a lot of kids to New York City, and then they were charging relatives to get them back to where they had been flown by the U.S. government for like no. It's mind-bogglingly stupid and inhumane and awful.
Mm-hmm.
The administration's attitude toward undocumented people is something that's harming undocumented people who are already here. We actually got something from a listener in North Carolina this week. Grace, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, for sure. And first of all, we love getting emails and feedback from you guys. So thank you for continuing to give us stories and inspiration. And please feel free to reach out. This is from a listener who works for a nonprofit in Charlotte called the Charlotte Center for Legal Advocacy. So basically, their immigrant justice program works on representing low-income and undocumented immigrants who are victims of domestic abuse. One of their clients was in court getting a domestic abuse protection order. Her name was Maria. She was getting a domestic violence protection order for her son, who was severely beaten and hospitalized by her American citizen fiancé. As they were exiting the court, ICE apprehended her and her son.
God.
Detained her at the local field office. Her two-year-old son, by the way, who is an American citizen, was left in court daycare for 6 hours. She was eventually released. Now she's in deportation proceedings.
Oh, my God.
So imagine being the victim of domestic violence and seeking help, actively seeking help, and instead being told, yeah, that's fine or whatever, but where are your papers?
It's just like a Venn diagram of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like domestic violence. It's like you're already going through, you know, there's been a lot of domestic violence in my family. You're already going through, you know, hell on earth. And then it's like, oh, let's just add insult to injury. And then it's like this other, it's just like this combination of just fire.
It's hatred of women and hatred of the other, of undocumented people, kind of just conflating into this just awful. Ugh.
It's I think also an inability to take responsibility and to step up and say, let's maybe prioritize here, for instance. If you're faced with somebody who's in that dire of a situation, are you really going to focus on what their citizenship is if they just desperately need help?
Yeah.
How do you consciously do that?
Also, like, it's probably in the best interest of the state to deport the American fiancé anyway.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Wouldn't we rather, like, get people? I mean, he's American, so unfortunately we can't deport him. But, I mean, I think that it makes more sense to get rid of violent individuals than it does to get rid of the people who are the victims of violence.
Totally.
It's just mind. But there are people in Charlotte who really have been moved by this woman's story.
Yes, 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 absolutely. According to an attorney for the Charlotte Center for Legal Advocacy, the mother and son were taken into custody shortly before the son was scheduled to testify against his mother's ex-fiance. Maria apparently has taken out a civil protective order against the ex-fiance and had moved herself and her children into a domestic violence shelter. And she said the man's complaint against her had no merit and was filed in retaliation. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the latest updates. We wanted to draw attention to a story like this because there is, as you mentioned, Kieran, a Venn diagram, an overlap of issues.
A Venn diagram of bullshit.
A Venn diagram of bullshit. We're not just dealing with people who are struggling to stay here in the country. We're also dealing with people who are here and whose quality of life is just horrific.
And when you don't have papers, it's like the way that you are so vulnerable to a system. So what was this woman supposed to hypothetically do? Just accept the domestic violence in her life?
That's,
do you know what I mean? Because it's
a brilliant point too, because think about the struggle that she has made just coming forth.
Sure.
How many women out there don't even feel like they have the courage to be able to step up and seek help?
Mm-hmm. Or the fear.
Yeah.
If you feel like, oh, I can't come forward to ask for help from, you know, the bureaucracy that's in place, because like what happens to my immigration status?
Right.
You know, so that goes for women who are experiencing, you know, like sexual violence. And if they're undocumented, you just don't have the same levels of recourse in terms of pay or in terms of any kind of abuse.
Yeah.
And that becomes so insidious.
This is why we refer to the undocumented community as living in the shadows, because they really do. I mean, as it is, There are so many repercussions right now with social media being as prominent as it is. We feel like any mistake that we might make in life could be displayed in to grand effect. But like, imagine just having to live as quietly as possible, not being able to identify yourself truly as who you may be because you're afraid of getting caught doing something wrong.
Right. Mm. And this also made me think, like, an undocumented person who is being subjected to abuse has to make a decision about what's worse, getting deported or continuing to be abused.
Right. Yeah.
And what a fucking awful decision to have to make. Nobody should have to make that decision. It's the state's role to protect people from abuse.
Yeah.
And
regardless
of their status, of anything about them, it's the state's role to protect people, whether they're prisoners, whether they're undocumented, whether they whatever their gender expression is. It's the state's role to protect people from abuse. And the state is utterly failing people. Mm-hmm. Utterly failing people.
The state regularly fails people. I mean, there's just, I mean, a big thing to me is like, there's just a level of systemic, when you put something into a system, into a bureaucracy, how easy it becomes for somebody else to say, hey, these are the rules, and like just shrug off like that idea of ordinary evil.
Mm-hmm.
That's very upsetting. It's why I yell a lot at American Airlines on the telephone.
Well, I think that's, this is all very dark, but people in Charlotte have mobilized in favor of this woman. There was a small demonstration, I believe, outside the courthouse recently. And, you know, if you're somebody who works with immigrant communities, don't hesitate to contact. Journalists are interested in covering this.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Contact a journalist that you know. Contact a podcast host that you know. One other thing that I wanted to bring up. There's another story that's really rough. There's not very much to say about it except that it's terrible and our hearts are with the people in Oakland. Nia Wilson was killed by a man. She and her sister were both stabbed on a BART platform outside of San Francisco. And it's a really horrible story. Mm-hmm. It's touched a lot of people, and people in Oakland are really mobilizing around Nia. And I just wanted our listeners, if you haven't read the story, it's really horrific, but it's something that we should, you know, not stop paying attention to. Mm-hmm. The state and individuals feel entitled to inflict violence against people who are not white all the time, and it's not going to go away unless we keep talking about it. So we're thinking about Nia Wilson and her family and the people of Oakland, and we are going to take a quick break. And we're back. We're going to talk about an extremely non-heavy news story. Although I, you know, every once in a while you need a little levity to keep yourself going. This week we got to hear how Trump handles dating via a tape that that his lawyer made of him and Michael Cohen discussing a payment to a woman who claimed that Trump and her were having an affair, which is pretty funny. But, you know, it's a little bit more difficult for people who aren't Donald Trump but are who are in his orbit to find dates. There's a story in Fox News this week about how Trump supporters in D.C., people who work in the Trump orbit, are having trouble getting laid.
Oh, my God. That's
super so hard.
So
super hard.
Wow.
I'm just going to read some quotes from this story because, I mean, like I said, it's kind of a subgenre right now. People are like, why are my terrible opinions leading people to believe I might be terrible? Well, gee, fucking Einstein, I don't know. One 29-year-old lobbyist told Fox that learning to date in the Trump world is, quote, absolutely insane. It's getting so bad, the lobbyist said, who has to remain anonymous because she works with the administration. Another person said that they've endured insults on dating apps for posing with the American flag.
Oh,
for loving America too much. You know what, though? If it looks like America's already your girlfriend, then I'm not going to try to compete with that.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm not trying to be a homewrecker.
Erin, I think what you're trying to do is make a PSA for these people who are really struggling out there, these Trump supporters. So to all of our listeners, it's like reach across the aisle with a reach around, you know? Reach around the aisle.
We're focused on parents being separated from their kids, but we should be focused on Trump supporters being separated from their good sex lives.
Yeah.
So
also, like,
from access
first
to
of all,
other genitalia. Yeah.
First of all, dating is rough regardless. Like, it's hard to find love, and there are plenty of people who can't find people to go out with, or they feel very lonely. And I don't mean to shame people who can't find dates, but I do mean to shame people who can't find dates and are assholes. It's funny when this stuff happens to assholes. It's like,
it's another Venn diagram of bullshit.
It totally is.
I'm into graphs, charts and graphs.
The Kieran Lane right there.
It's just Venn diagrams.
It's really, it's all just Venn diagrams.
Well, here's what's interesting to me. It seems to be focused, like all these people are focused on how hard it is to find people via dating apps, right? All the Trump supporters are like, every time I'm on a dating app and like, you know, I get either kicked off Tinder because I have the MAGA hat on or like I end up meeting somebody and then they discover, like, what do you expect from dating apps? Regardless of whether you're a Trump supporter or not, from what I understand, it's miserable for everybody. So it's like, yeah, you're getting some form of prejudice because, you know, you're on a dating app. Well, that's to be expected, I think. Know that before you get into it.
Yeah, I assume that people on dating apps are spies. I assume everybody's a spy, first
yes,
of all.
That's
but
fair.
Like, you know, anytime anybody good looking engages with me, I'm like, what's your deal? Are you trying to get info? Because I don't have any info. I'm not important. I mean, have you ever stopped, like, when you were dating, did you ever stop seeing somebody because of their political beliefs?
I know that I couldn't do it because it's like, even if I've dated somebody who's like a different, you know, somebody who doesn't understand like gender discrimination or like doesn't believe that that's real or really has a hard time comprehending it, or somebody who's, you know, entire friend group like or has really empathetic views, but it's like then I like look at their friends and I was like, you only hang out with white dudes. Like, how is everyone you know a white dude? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's already going to be, like, you know, points of disconnect maybe in your experience with whoever your partner is. And I think if the rift is that big, it would just be it would just categorically be very difficult to bridge the gap. Like, I'm sure there's good things about everybody. Do you know what I mean? Everybody
totally.
Everybody poops, you know.
Well, even with friends and family members, like hearing, you know, that somebody's a Trump supporter has, it causes a rift. So yeah, I can only imagine if that's going on in your dating life. I don't know why you stick it out.
Yeah,
because you're not already related. That's right.
You
have a choice to roll out.
Yep, yeah, exactly. I try to be pretty open-minded with my friends, but I think that everybody is totally reasonable in narrowing what their standards are for somebody they're going to date.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I have plenty of friends who one of my very favorite people in the world is a woman who is adamantly pro-life. And she and I sometimes talk about our differences. Sometimes we don't really get super, super into it. I know exactly where she's coming from. She knows where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I adore her. But if she were a man, I probably wouldn't date her. You know, because she's my friend, and I think that it's fine to be friends with somebody who's totally different from you beliefs-wise, as long as they're willing to, in good faith, engage with you. But when it comes to a partner, I just can't.
Well, if you were going to date her and then you guys had an accident, you'd have, like, a categorical, like, that would really, very problematic, you know? Like, you're not on the same page.
Yeah. I think there's also, like, a justice thing, too, because it'd be one thing if Donald Trump were not the person in power right now.
Yeah.
You know, because then it'd just be sort of like, oh, that's weird.
It's quirky.
Like somebody, it's like somebody who voted for Ron Paul. You're like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But, you know, if Ron Paul were actually the president, they would become a menacing entity because a lot of Ron Paul's views are dangerously kooky.
Right, right.
So I think that, you know, if Donald Trump was just like a fringe weirdo, it'd sort of be just a funny little detail. But instead, it's kind of everything.
It's an ethos is the thing. It's really not just like one vote that you cast. It's really a worldview. This is what I was going to say. Tell me what you guys think about this. Might actually be a bit of a departure. Part of what makes me roll my eyes about this whole group of people is that there's nothing more basic bitch than somebody who's just like, I'm a Trump supporter, I'm not a Trump supporter. There's no nuance to it. There's nothing that is not a personality. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that's the issue with this community is that in many ways they're sort of hinging their entire personality on them being Trump supporters. That's them now.
Right.
And that doesn't tell me anything about you except that, like, I probably don't like you and I probably have a propensity to take fault with your personality, but there's not anything there that's deep at all.
Right. They're kind of like the Juggalos, but not likable.
Yes.
Because Juggalos are super likable.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly
what
it.
What is a Juggalo?
Oh. Kieran.
I'm very sorry.
We'll send you some pics.
Google it.
Yeah.
That was
the most disappointed I've ever heard you be about a thing.
I'm going to pull
the
picture of the Insane Clown Posse
Kieran.
Right now so you can see this.
Kieran.
They're fans of a rock rap group called Insane Clown Posse. And they are, generally speaking, and kind of proud outsiders. And you should do some reading on them.
Grace is just showing me Google images, and I can honestly say I had no idea about this sub-community. But between now and the next podcast, I'll do a deep dive and paint my face.
There's been some really good journalism about Juggalos. And it's, I think that at first people were laughing at them, and then people came around to be like, actually, they're super nice and support each other and love each other. And now, like, now we kind of miss the days. I wish that we had a Juggalo president, TBH.
I agree completely. By the way, maybe that's the issue. It's like Trump community, the Trump supporter community need to learn to love themselves. Just like the Juggalos. So maybe if you look within your own community, you'll find somebody who... it has the same ideology as you do. And
swipe
then you
right
can
on
find
yourself.
Swipe right on yourself. Exactly.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take a quick trip to New York City for Dude, You Asked. And we're back with A Week in Sorry. I'm Erin. I'm with Kieran and Grace. We are going to go over apologies. Apologies that were, apologies that are, apologies that will never be. Women over-apologize. I think that puts us in a unique position to assess the sincerity of apologies from other people. So let's get into it. Kieran, what is your sorry from the week?
Mine was this Refinery29 article, which many of you might have read about the money diaries that they run. And they had a really specific one. And we're going to get more into this in like future episodes. But they had this really specific one that kind of got the internet aflame. It was about a 21-year-old debt-free college student who makes $25 an hour at an internship while she collects a $1,100 monthly allowance from her family, as well as $2,100 for rent. And then I think that there was plus a $300 from her granddad that
which
she was
is
like,
crazy.
And then insane. She was like, hashtag blessed, which I really didn't appreciate. There's, again, we'll get into this in, you know, the taboo of money like later on, but Refinery29 definitely, you know, caught wind of the fact that people were really like, what the fuck? Why are you running this? And their title for the thing was about that money diary. And they're like, yes, we know you've got opinions on last week's entry. Here's to all the haters. And then they go on to show a ton of charts and graphs of their demographics and who they've interviewed and who's rich and who's poor, which is like never the way to go into an apology, I would say, is to be like, here's to all you haters. And then it's just like charts and graphs of like why you're actually right and dope. So I was not super happy with Refinery 29 on this one.
What I thought was weird about it is the headline was like, the gist of it was like, here's why you like to judge women and how they spend money.
Right. Which it's so like.
Yeah, this is not a gender thing. This is a you a stupid hoe thing.
Yeah.
That crosses all gender expressions.
If like, if a man, if it were a money diary of a 21-year-old man, I would be like, fuck that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's not. It is not a gender thing. It is a money thing. And it's also a, hey, Refinery 29, you have a huge fucking platform thing. And this is the person that you choose to profile in your, even if you're doing a lot of profiles, it's like, how many have you done? Mm-hmm. Have you done 2,000? Mm-hmm. No? Then fucking, you know, stay in your lane a little bit with that and maybe don't pick the people who have, you know, 8,000,100.
I do like that it's united so many people in our hatred for both the article and for this person who may not even exist, right? What are the chances?
Oh, yeah. There was one popular conspiracy theory that I saw on Twitter.com where a woman was like, I don't think these people are real. And I'm compelled to think that that's not a crazy thing to say.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, it's, I mean, I'm not going to accuse Refinery 29 of making something up.
No, no.
But
no.
A column, whenever I read anything on the internet that I'm like, this is fucking nuts. It could be.
Like the sex diaries is the equivalent in the cut. Or even like Ryan's Roses or whatever on Kiss FM. Like those kinds of, you know, oh, we're going to catch you in the middle of an affair. That's all, it's all fake. They have voiceover actors doing it. I think don't believe everything we read on the internet, but sure, get incensed over that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is there are people who are paid a lot, whose parents give them money,
yes,
who are born on third base, and not only think they hit a triple, they think they invented baseball. and I think that that's something that it's good for us to unite around, making that a publicly distasteful way to live.
Totally.
People need to learn. Shame is a good tool. Mm-hmm. I think that's good. And Refinery 29's explanation wasn't really up to snuff. And it wasn't an apology. Yeah. I don't think they needed to apologize.
Right.
But their explanation was kind of like, what?
Yeah. It is a very like, here's all the shitty things that you say in the comments. Here's how you judge people. Here's how we're amazing. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, here's how I don't like you as much anymore.
Oh, God. Okay, Grace, what do you got?
Okay, so Minnesota Representative Jason Lewis has refused to apologize for past remarks as the host of a radio show wherein he lamented not being able to call women sluts.
That's true. We are arresting men for calling women sluts nowadays. Ever since the Don't Call Us Sluts Act of 2010.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. And his statement in 2012 was, are we beyond those days where a woman can behave as a slut, but you can't call her a slut? He whined. That's a real whine. Dude, right there.
So I grew up in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, but across the border in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I remember when he had a radio show, and my dad used to hate listen to it. My real dad, not Paul Ryan, my Pods of America joke dad. But he used to listen to it, and I remember my mom and him getting into arguments. My mom being like, "We're not listening to Jason Lewis," and my dad thinking like, "What? I have to learn what they're saying," and my mom being like, "No." Here's the thing that's like interesting to me about Jason Lewis, though. Jason Lewis is currently representing Minnesota's 2nd District.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Republican. He is running against Angie Craig, who he narrowly defeated in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
That is a tight race,
tight.
Minnesota. Minnesota, listen, you can unseat Rep. Jason Lewis. Like, you can do it. He wants to call you a slut.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have a congressman who wants to call you a slut.
And not like in a quirky, ironic way either, because I'm all for like taking over words like bitch that we use
or hysteria
right.
Those are coming from women.
Yeah.
They're not coming from somebody who thinks women are sluts.
Yeah, exactly.
And we had an election where we voted in a dude who talked about grabbing him by the pussy, and this is like at least a statewide version of something that can be done.
Yeah,
on a local level that would rectify that a little bit.
I'm with you on
or
this
not
call
make
to
the
action.
Same mistake twice.
Yes, exactly. And that's why I'm with you on this call to action too, because it's like we can do something actionable to prevent this kind of thing. This person should never have been in office to begin with. Mm-hmm. Stick to radio. Not podcast, please. That's our lane. But...
Stick to making my parents fight.
Yeah.
He's running against Angie Craig is the name of his opponent. Her website is angiecraig.com. She's a Democrat. She's a woman. I think if you are in Minnesota's 2nd District, I think you know what to do. Mm-hmm. I think if you're not in Minnesota's 2nd District, I think you also know what to do.
Move there.
Pick up your life now.
Yeah. I really think that eventually we're going to have to get to a point where we regentrify red states. We're going to have a strategic, like,
absolutely.
We're going to go colonize small town America and regentrify it. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, like Iowa. Like Iowa is one of those states, I think, that's kind of most poised for that, right?
Wisconsin, too.
Wisconsin
had been, it voted blue in almost every presidential, well, in every presidential election for several in a row. Mm-hmm. I think after 84, it was blue every election until 2016.
Just start like an avocado toast factory in the middle, and then the millennials will flock.
I was going to say, they actually do have very nice lakes there.
Iowa?
I've gone there a lot.
Iowa's really pretty.
Well, I was going to say Wisconsin, too. Mm-hmm. It's very pretty. They got a lot of nice lakes. And then what's that thing that they have?
The cheese curds?
That's correct. Yeah. It's like she knew it. She knew what I was talking about. And I was like, and those are delicious. And
curds?
I think you could, I mean, if you had the toast factory with the curds.
And an IPA, and an IPA on tap.
Oh, my God. Like, beer in Wisconsin is also incredible.
Phenomenal. So, I mean, sold.
Yeah. Figure this out.
Lake house with cheese curds and avocado toast.
We're gonna regentrify the Midwest. We're coming back. All right, Kieran and Grace, thank you so much for bringing your apologies or non-apologies to me today, to our listeners today. Up next, I'll Have What She's Having with Alyssa Mastromonaco and Ziwe Fumudo. I'll Have What She's Having. This is where the women of hysteria recommend things that women made, women they find inspirational, and we talk about them and we tell you all about them. So I'm here with Ziwe and Alyssa, part of the New York crew, and we are recommending some ladies to you this week. Ziwe, do you want to get started?
Sure. I will recommend the most pivotal book in my lifetime, which was Sula by Toni Morrison. It is a beautiful book about a woman who is kind of a messiah of a community, and she never gets any credit for it. Sula, go read a book.
I just pictured the reading rainbow theme. Do you remember that thing? It was like, da-da-da.
Yeah. There's a rainbow over me in the studio, actually.
Alyssa, what's yours?
So I have two ladies, Ashley Park and Kate Rockwell. Ashley Park played Gretchen Wieners, and Kate Rockwell plays Karen Smith in Mean Girls on Broadway. Mm. And I was very skeptical about Mean Girls on Broadway, but it's genius. And they are such iconic characters that I didn't think it could be done, but they're awesome. And you should go see them because they're awesome.
It's a great play.
It's a musical, and I want to go back and see it again because it's actually incredibly timely, and there are some fun Trump references in it.
Tina Fey wrote it.
Yeah, Tina Fey wrote it.
And her husband wrote the music for it.
Yep.
Talk about a Ruth and Marty relationship.
I know. That's a great pairing.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I want. Yeah.
I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having. And she's having an orgasm.
So my recommendation is an artist named Mitski, a musical artist named Mitski. She has a new album dropping in August, and I'm a huge fan of hers. Mm. She's Canadian-American, and she has this really kind of cool, husky voice and this minimalist style that all of a sudden will just explode at you, and it's really gorgeous. Her last album, I've been re-listening to her last album in preparation for the new album dropping in August, and it's called Puberty 2, and that album is perfect, top to bottom. It's such a good album. Just listen to it from the beginning to the end, and your life will change.
And I just have to say that Erin has a lot of good musical recommendations on her Insta story. And I often pick them up and I listen to them, and she has very good taste. So
never disappoints.
Check it out. Never disappoints.
Oh, thank you guys. Alyssa, Ziwe, thanks for hanging out with me.
Bye.
Hello. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, bye.
Okay, we're back in Los Angeles. I'm Erin with Grace and Kieran. We're going to end the episode, but first, the dumbest hill I'm dying on this week. I've got a dumb hill that I'm going to die on, guys. I think high-waisted pants are good, and I like them. High-waisted shorts, high-waisted pants. High-waisted jeans. I think they're good. I've seen people complain about them a lot, but I think they're good. I like them.
I don't disagree with that at all. I completely agree.
I think this really depends on your figure. okay? Because high-waisted pants can be very unflattering for certain people, a.k.a. me. and I don't like them.
You're hard pass.
Because it can be big on the hips, or if your boobs are big, it makes them look like really crazy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
if you're wearing like one of those small shirts and it's just like a mess.
I don't think everybody should wear high-waisted pants, but because I agree that they're
so
not
you're into discrimination.
They're not. I know they're not. There's like styles that are not universally flattering, but I don't think that we should disparage them because on some people they are very flattering.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's my hill that I'm going to die on this week.
Mm. I think that's fair.
Grace, what's yours?
Mine actually might be a little bit controversial. Let's see what you guys think. It's maybe not that dumb. Have you guys seen Who Is America, the new Sacha Baron Cohen show?
Yeah.
I don't think that it is the solution. And that is the hill that I'm willing to die on this week. Mm. I think that Sacha Baron Cohen is shocking, and I think it's a hilarious show. I think he's brilliant at what he does. I think the prosthetics could use some work on that show. but I've been thinking that like it's divisive, and I think it's partisan, and I think it's a little harmful. And I mean, we could do a deep dive into this at some point because I think like the ramifications of it are still coming out. I think what it's done for who's the Georgia representative.
Jason something.
The fact that he's resigning, I think that we just heard about that last night or this morning, is an indication of how this show is actually making real inroads into the world of politics in a positive way. But when we have a shock jock artist as our president, a shock artist as a comedian, like in the way that Sacha Baron Cohen is, it just doesn't land as much as it did in years past.
That's interesting. You know, one thing that I think is really good about the show, and I know people who worked on it. Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliantly put together, too. Like,
yeah.
It really is. I don't want to disparage the quality of the work.
Yeah, it is. It's really funny. One of the things I like about the show is that the Israeli character kind of takes advantage of right-wing, like, kind of blind Israeli allegiance. So, like,
yes.
He's able to get access to people, I think, by taking advantage of the fact that a lot of people on the American right wing are so ostensibly on that character's side that they are willing to overlook obvious clues that he's just screwing with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it exposes like blind allegiance to a specific ideology can be dangerous to you, regardless of what that ideology is, because it can lead you astray.
Yes.
I think
yes.
That's an important lesson.
Yeah,
but that's
sure.
I bet we're going to get some interesting listener.
I want to hear some feedback. Yeah.
Because yours is kind of like a when they go low, we go high.
I guess it's
a little bit of that.
Or it's more like if they've, you know, what new things are we learning really from the, like, we already know that some of these people that have been exposed are dummy dum-dums who shouldn't have been in office to begin with. We already know that.
That's a technical term.
That's a technical term. Look it up. It's in the declaration.
Poli-sci.
Yeah, exactly. so yeah, I mean, I think it's a super courageous show. I think it's really funny, but I think it doesn't go far enough. And I'm interested to see. Let's get some feedback and see what people think about that.
All right, Karen, what's yours?
Mine is controversial, but in a different way. I don't like weed, and I'm willing to die on that hill.
Yeah, okay.
Whoa. Very controversial for California. That's a true California opinion. I don't like weed, and I don't appreciate when people who really like weed try to push it on me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When they're just like, hey, man, haven't tried the right one yet. Like, try sativa. What about the blue?
I like this character, by the way.
Do you know what I mean? Thank you. That's actually my impression of everyone who isn't myself.
That's perfect.
But it's just like, they're always like, nah, nah, nah. And it's like, why are you peddling a drug and trying to push it on me? I was like, if the drug, I have tried weed. Mm-hmm. And I don't like it. It doesn't work for me. It doesn't make me feel good. And people are like, but you just didn't do the right way. Give it another chance. And I was like, I'm not in a fucking relationship with weed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't need to. If I'm putting in more effort than the drug, I don't want the drug.
You know what? You know what it reminds me of? I'm not a big weed fan either, which is like I moved to California and it's like, I don't want to do this. You know, one thing that's like it reminds me of is if you're a woman who doesn't like oral sex, men are always like, you just haven't met me. And it's like, no. No. It's like, if you don't like something that specifically is expected to be in the repertoire and you're like, I don't like it. They're like, no, it's just, I haven't done it
yet.
It's
like, right.
No, I don't want to do it.
Right.
And people are like that with weed 100%. I don't disagree with you on that.
I don't disagree either, and I'm wondering what that says about us as a group, because it's not. I've tried it myself a couple times as well. I don't really get it. It's generally been in conjunction with alcohol, where it's sort of it all mingles in together. What I'm interested in now is that there's this new movement to put weed, like little droplets of weed in lattes. Like every place in Los Angeles now is selling weed lattes. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a real thing. So it's like, you know, a $7 latte. You can get a little bit of weed oil or whatever it's called. I'm sure a listener will tell us what that is. It's taking it too far. It's too far.
I'm leaving. That's it. I'm leaving.
Aaron's out. Aaron's out.
I'm out. That's all the time we have today, guys. Thank you for sharing the hills you'll die on. I'm Aaron Ryan. Need to get in touch. Hysteria@crooked.com. There will be more Hysteria next week.